Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Sophia Wilson, Acting Deputy Editor at Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Cecile Gowan, Editor of Boat International's US edition. Cecile, it's been a while since you've been on the podcast as co-host. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, it's been a while. It's great to be here with you today. I'm a big, big fan of Boat Briefing.
Now, you very kindly agreed to be on the podcast this week because Stuart's on the slopes, but it's actually perfect timing. Well, it is for us. I don't think it is quite so much for you because it's the middle of the Miami Boat Show. How is it going?
It's going great. The weather is a little bit funky, but it's very busy in terms of visitors. The show kicked off yesterday, and the one difference is that there's quite fewer big boats than in previous years, although it's still worth going. There's plenty to see, equipment, tenders, fishing boats, and an incredible array of center consoles with big power. I'm talking 5, 6 outboards, 2,400 horsepower. It's just crazy. The big attraction at the Island Gardens, which is the Big Yacht Marina, which is a part of the show, are the Amos Gin Machine and the Diamond Gin Chaser, which we have written about in the past. Freddie is debuting a couple of new boats to the US, the 3500 and the Riva Diable. And don't get me wrong, there's lots to see. But in general, the builders and brokers are kind of low in inventory. You've talked about that on Boat Briefing previously. Obviously, everybody knows people have gone boat crazy. So there's very little on the market. So the exhibitors have had to ask for the owners to lend some of their yachts to put in the show. So here we are.
And is that why Gin Chaser and Gin Machine are there? Because they're not on the market, right?
I don't believe so, no. They're a very busy program, and I think they're just there to showcase the Amos and Devon Shipyard's capabilities there, yeah.
And have you managed to sneak back on board or not had time? You've obviously done a lot with them, kind of.
Not yet. That's on the to-do list for today. No, I'd be very excited, because last time I was on a Gin Chaser, it was just barely finished a few months, was it May last year, I think? Barely finished and just about to embark on this incredible busy program. So I'd be really interested to see it all decked out.
And we've obviously touched on briefly there the kind of physical yachts that are there, but a lot of the hype around the show or kind of noise beforehand has been about the metaverse. Has there been more talk about it at the show?
Yes, definitely. So they've installed themselves in the VIP lounge there, the Windward Club, and the company is Cloud Yachts, and there's quite a good buzz going. They did their best to promote this going in. They had the Yacht Guy, you know, the influencer on social media, and other people shared the news, and people are really talking about it. And it's interesting. I went to talk to him yesterday, first thing, actually. try to figure out more about it, because I am not sure I understand everything, and honestly, I'm not sure everybody knows exactly where we're going with this. But there is a great deal of interest. So what Yacht Club has done with Denison Yachting is actually involved in this, is to ask big name designers like Battenberg and Raoul, Greg Marshall, Marco Caselli, and J. David Weiss to produce artwork for NFTs. So I'm not going to go into things about the NFT because I barely understand it myself. But they're a permanent record on the digital, in a digital format that you can own. And, you know, there's a lot of big yacht nuts out there that who may never purchase a yacht or just are dreaming big. And it's a collectible, you know, basically you can buy it. And once you own it, you can do whatever you want with it. You can, you know, print t-shirts with it. I don't know anything. so there's that. There is one on offer, which is a Greg Marshall design, a 63 meter, which more or less $95 million. So it's a pretty big NFT, big ticket item. So what that includes the entire design package, the construction process, which would be done using augmented reality. And the designer, Greg Marshall, is the first one to say, I don't think that will sell, you know, right off the bat, 95 million. But if it would, you know, there would be a stop there. They would like check out the person, make sure everything is okay. And then they would go to more of a regular contract process. But it's a very interesting thing. And they've actually sold several already. As of yesterday, Zach told me they had sold 7 NFTs. And Greg Marshall sent me a text. He's not at the show this year, but he sent me a very excited text that he had sold one for $3,000, more or less, one Ethereum. So, interesting. We'll see what happens with that. I think it's a nice way of maybe getting people excited about yachting in a different way, attract different people to the world. PR marketing is all part of it. But there are probably implications that go into building a yacht virtually, where you can communicate, you know, through avatars and walk through the whole thing in this virtual world, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, I think for me, the design, you know, that working with a design for a real life yacht, I can see, and it seems really exciting, and I can see that idea, you know, not having to necessarily travel to the shipyard to see how the build's coming on, being able to do that virtually from anywhere as a world, like as an owner, that would be a huge, you know, we know owners are time poor, that would be a huge advantage. It's then when it moves into the kind of whole metaverse, owning a yacht in the metaverse, that I start to get yes. a bit confused.
Apparently it's big. One of the designers was telling me this, I think it was Marco Casselli, who is a lovely Italian designer, you know, very big into the green yachts, and we chatted for a while. I think it was him who told me that you know, people are building real apartments or condos virtually, villas virtually, never to be used. I don't understand it myself, but hey, why not?
Well, yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. As you say, there's, you know, there's clearly trying to make a lot of noise about it. And it's, yeah, be interesting to see what more comes out of it and what more starts selling after Miami, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what Greg Marshall says, that we're really in the early days. I think, you know, it's back to the days of the beginning of the web. You know, I didn't know what a domain name was when people were already buying all of them, you know. and he figures that, you know, it will evolve and we'll figure it out. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, maybe we're missing our opportunity here. We could be billionaires too, Cecile.
That's right. We need to figure this out fast.
Okay, I'll put more time into it. Right. Now, in the pod, we normally always talk about the boat international issue being on sale, but this timing also works quite well because the US edition comes out in the next couple of days, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The March issue.
Yes, it does. And in Miami, actually, this week, I tried a electric tender by Candela. Candela is one of the companies that we discussed in an article that is in the March issue about electric tenders. And it was quite fun. I had never been on an electric foiling tender before, and I love the experience. It's really quiet, obviously, and then you're 2 feet above the chop, so it's really comfortable. You don't have that rolling and hitting the water. It's amazing. And we were having fun watching all the big stuff going around us, you know, the big powered boats and then pushing all this water, and, you know, we're barely leaving a trace behind. It was great. So that's a C7. And Candela just came out yesterday with the news that they took the first flight, as they call it, with their new C8, which has quite a few differences with the C7, including a new electric engine. And so I'm sure we'll be writing about that probably in the next few months or so. That was very interesting. So I was there with the US CEO, Tanguy de la Motte, who's a big time sailor, you know, very, very accomplished, and he's taken on the U.S. division for Candela, and they're doing quite well. They've sold 8 currently, and they're talking with many people on big commercial contracts for transport around lakes and things like that. Very interesting.
Does it feel like the future to you?
Yes. I mean, I don't know how far you can take foiling, but yes, it does. You know, in a place like Miami, you know, when there's so much water and you can pull up to your dock in front of your villa and then to the restaurants, you know, around, it's quiet, it's in the protected waters, it's perfect. It's not an ocean going thing, you know, it's not meant for that, but definitely. And lakes, perfect for lakes, you know, if you live on the waterfront somewhere and you don't want to bother your neighbors and And you can go quite fast and not disrupt anyone. It's wonderful.
Well, regular listeners will have heard Stuart and I last week briefly talk about the finalists for the Boat Design and Innovation Awards. But Cecile, you are co-chair of the judging panel. So as we have you on the podcast, what can you tell us? What's the insider gossip from the judges' room?
No gossip. I just can't. What happens at the BDA stays with the BDA. But we had a good year. We had 64 yachts and tenders entered, I believe, in 15 different categories. And unfortunately, again, this year, we couldn't get together. So we had to meet virtually. The metaverse again. Here we are. And it was over 2 days, 5 hours each. And we had a big time difference. One of our judges in Australia, my co-chair, Marilyn Maurer, and myself are in the US, and we had people in Europe in between. So that was interesting. There was quite a few lively discussions, I must say. Not everybody agrees, and it's a nice part of having this panel. We have people who are very diverse in their interests and knowledge. We have, furniture designer, light designers, people who are in more car design, yacht designers. So everybody brings a different perspective. So it was very interesting. There was a couple of yachts that did get a lot of people to agree. The biggest category where we had the most entries was the interior design for yachts below 500 gross ton. A lot of entries there, a lot of interesting stuff. And unfortunately, it was really competitive. And that was a really tough one to decide. And then one of the highlights this year, I think, was the sailboat entries were really good. We all enjoyed looking at those exterior and interior design and naval architecture. Really interesting this year in the sailing categories. I hope it's a trend that will pick up and continue to go because, this is sailing is a nice thing to look at in these days when everybody's talking about eco-green, cutting back on emissions. And yeah, that's about it. I think that's kind of a highlight. Oh, we had a very nice, interesting category in innovation. That's one I really like. Innovation of the Year, it's called. And it was very different interpretation on the theme from like construction methods to a way of expanding the deck or morphing it according to the people using it, which was an entry by Sunseeker. All very interesting. So yeah, so keep an eye out on that. I can't say much more because we haven't announced the winners. but that will be done in conjunction with the Super Yacht Design Festival in Milan on June 22nd. So
yeah, it's great having those events back together. They obviously got kind of split up during COVID time, as did everything. But I'm looking forward to having them back together. They're such a kind of natural partnership.
That would be great.
And you'll be over in Milan as well, so I get to see you face to face, which is another bonus of these things.
Yes, me too. It's been a while.
And it was interesting as well what you were saying about really competitive in that under 500 gross tons category. It does feel at the moment that's a really kind of hot part of the market, isn't it? Both in terms of demand and then what people are creating to fill that demand.
Absolutely. There's a lot of creativity going on, reinventing sort of the use of the space. I'm not sure where this came from, but like everybody is trying to go for the longest under 500 gross ton kind of thing. It makes for very interesting, reinterpretation of space, and it's amazing. I mean, the same amount of space the same length you had many 7 years ago, it feels like we have so much more space for the same length now. And we do actually look at the general arrangements and the layout carefully in the awards. It's not just looking at pictures. We kind of go through, and that's part of the categories that we look at. The virtues of the yacht is how it's arranged, how the space is used, and how functional it is for the crew, for the guests, the water access, and so forth.
Well, we have to wait to find out who the winners are of that until June. So your lips are sealed until then.
Yes.
Before then, we do also have the World Super Yacht Awards, which are taking place back in London in May, and tickets are now on sale. I think I mentioned in last week's podcast they're about to go on sale. They are now officially on sale. So you can go to the Boat International website and find out how to apply. The festivities are going to begin on the Friday, May the 20th, with welcome drinks and a private tour of Westminster Abbey. I mean, I've lived in London for well over a decade now, and I don't think I've ever been inside Westminster Abbey, so that is an exciting proposition.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and then there's going to be a cultural programme on the Saturday, followed by, obviously, the Black Tie Awards ceremony and the gala dinner later that evening, which will be in London's Guildhall. So, yeah, as I mentioned, all the information about how to apply for tickets is on the website. The judges are meeting for that, I believe, in London in a few weeks' time. So we'll announce the final nominees, hopefully in early March. So that'll be something else to look out for.
Very, very good. I'll put that on my calendar. So are you shopping? Have you lined up the outfit yet?
No, I have started thinking about it. Because also, I mean, yeah, London in May, it could be miserable or it could be beautiful. I'll hope for the latter. But yeah, I do need to start planning my dress. Obviously, Monaco last September, it was nice and warm. It was very easy to not have any sleeves. It was lovely. But yeah, I might need a little bit, at least a warmer backup option, I think.
Oh, it's lovely. Last time I was there was, what was it? 2-3 years ago, I guess. 3 years ago, it must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It was May and it was nice. A little cool.
Yeah, not 80% humidity that you're used to.
Yeah, no, not quite.
Right, well, shall we now go on to this week's news? So we'll start with the 74-metre Amel superyacht. Avanti has been delivered to her new owner. Built under the codename Project Shadow, the yacht is the sixth hull in the shipyard's Amel's 242 limited editions range and joins sister ships such as Plus Ultra and Synthesis on the water. The exterior of the Amel's 242 limited editions has been designed by Tim Hayward, with British studio Winch Design was chosen to handle the interior spaces. The owner has been closely involved in tailoring the yacht to their tastes, opting for an ice blue hull colour and a Matterhorn white superstructure. Avanti can sleep up to 12 guests across 6 cabins with a crew of 19. And other notable features include a dedicated owner's deck with a 4-deck jacuzzi and an increased capacity helicopter deck. So we'll look forward to seeing her out and about.
Sounds nice. Right, so let's see, what else do we have? Oh yes, Bilgin Yachts, the third 80-meter super yacht was sold by Blue Water Yachting, who introduced the buyer. It was codenamed Project Silence. And the new construction builds on the success of the shipyard 80-meter superyacht Tatiana, which some of you may have seen at the Monaco Yacht Show this year. Let's see, the third hull in the series will offer 20% more volume. Really? Wow, because that was a big boat already. as well as great comfort and autonomy at sea. All three hulls in the 263 series have a slender profile created by Unique Yacht Design with interiors by British studio H2 Yacht Design. It says here that the new design benefits from a fresh new layout and a number of technical refinements, including a longer upper deck and an extra covered area at the stern. The second hull of the 263 series, which has already sold, is due to be launched later this year. Also underway at the Turkish shipyard is a 74-meter yacht with delivery in 2024, and 250-meter sister ship will be technically launched this year. Wow, they're really busy over there now.
Yeah, Stuart obviously went out and saw them a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it just seems like the whole industry in Turkey is absolutely booming at the moment. But yeah, it's exciting that, yeah, and then yet another big project underway. So carrying on. Darman Yachting has begun construction on an all-new 53-metre support vessel. Construction is already underway after 2 years of design and development, with the first steel cutting completed at its shipyard's Antalya facility. The YS-53 is an evolution of the YS-5009, originally based on Darman's commercial platforms, and features a new hull form courtesy of Darman Yachting's in-house team of naval architects. Highlights include a vast aft deck across a 9-metre beam for carrying toys and tenders and a 15-tonne deck crane for launch and recovery. The yacht sits beneath the 500 GT threshold, which, as we've been discussing, seems important at the moment.
Definitely.
They're on message and can carry anywhere between 6 and 16 guests or staff, depending on how the owner wishes to use the vessel, as well as accommodation for a crew of 10. So, yeah, another support vessel from Darman.
Wow. They keep cranking them out and everybody's buying them for good reasons. They go everywhere. Let's see what happened in Italy this week. Rossetti laid the keel on the second of its 38-meter RS Y Explorer. Actually, the first one was entered in the BD competition this year. Very interesting, good-looking boat. The construction milestone took place with the owners present at the Rossetti Marino Group shipyard in Ravenna, Italy. It comes after the hull was sold in December 2021, with Burgess introducing the owners. Speaking about the milestone, Rossetti's chairman and chief executive officer, Emmanuel Bellettini, said, "We are extremely proud to see the passion and enthusiasm in the eyes of the owners and all our colleagues at the special keel laying." That's always a very special time. I've been to a couple of those. I love that. Very nice. The delivery date is slated for August 2023, and this is second hull is set to sport interiors by Bordiso Caponi Yacht and Design, who were chosen specifically by the owners.
Well, there we go. So that's a quick roundup of some of the news stories that have caught our eye this week. So we'll now move on to the data, which, as ever, is brought to you by Boat Pro. See if your industry's leading market intelligence service. So with Miami Boat Show on this week, we thought we should have a look, well, have an American focus. And during FLIBS, we looked at the overall US fleet, but this time our data wizard, Raphael, has pulled out some data on the US order book. So as a quick reminder for those who haven't got the stats to hand for when we discussed it at FLIBS, the US fleet makes up 15.5% of the global fleet. The fleet's mainly composed of motor yachts with just 150 US-built sailing yachts. And it's also relatively old. Cecile, do you want to have a guess? I was playing this game in the office earlier. So the average age of an American yacht, or maybe you know this information by off the top of your head anyway.
Average. Oh, average. Yeah, there's some there that have been around for a while. Average. 9 years?
It's 30 years old.
No way.
Which just
average.
Yeah.
Well, I'm way off. Way, way off.
I'm going to go back and double check that figure because it seems crazy to me.
30 years average, really? Wow.
So it is an old fleet.
Yes.
Definitely, clearly. Anyway, we know that the US market has had a tough decade or so. And during the 8 years between 2012 and 2020, the US production just continued to fall and fall. However, in 2021, it did grow for the first time, and things are looking even more positive for 2022. So there are 42 projects this year, 27 of which are sports fish, 12 are motor yachts, and then there's 3 sailing yachts as well, which is a 28.6% increase, which is great to see. But I will caveat that positivity with that the total in 2022 is still only half of the production reported 10 years ago. So it does really show that decline.
Yeah, I mean, some of the big yards are just gone. You know, Trinity Yachts used to crank those boats. Where sport is still going, but, you know, their production is a little bit smaller than it was. I don't know what's happened there. I've never gotten a really, really good, thorough explanation as to why that happened.
Yeah, it does seem like a strange anomaly in the industry that, you know, obviously we know there's so many American yacht owners, and yet American production doesn't seem to be able to resonate with them, I guess.
Right. Well, it's really true in the, you know, bigger yacht segment, but, you know, on the smaller end of things, which we don't look at, you know, under 24 meters, they're still cranking out boats like mad. I mean, it's really big. It's just the big yacht segment. Yeah. Shipyards have slowed down quite a bit.
Anyway, 86% of sports fish, as we kind of, well, smaller and sports fish, are obviously the kind of big American areas, are built in the US. And the success of this year's order book is linked to the success of sports fish yards with Viking, but also Merritt Smith and Rybovich. Viking is actually 13th in the 2022 global order book with 22 projects underway. And this is the first time that there's been an American shipyard in the top 20 since 2019, which again was Viking, who was sitting in 18th place then.
Right. Yeah, and if you counted the smaller boats too.
Yeah, maybe a lot higher.
They're doing incredibly well with the Valhalla line, which is center consoles. I mean, just really, really well with that. So I wanted to say, yes, the yards are down, but as you know, I don't need to tell you, but our listeners probably know this, but just to remind them that the Americans are buying boats like crazy. So, you know, even if they're not building the US, they're buying them, you know, in Turkey, Italy, Asia, wherever they're being built. Ferretti yesterday had a press conference, and they announced that their market share for the US is now up to 35%. So 35% of all the production comes to the US, which is really significant. And I think FedShip, I said that this before, I think about half of what the Yahtzee bill come to the US.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Which brands do you think particularly, which European brands do you think particularly resonate well with the US market?
I mean, you name it, the big names, you know, certainly Faraday and Azimut Benetti do very well here in the US. If you talk about European builders, you know, in the super yacht segment, FedShip, Amels does very well in the US. Amels, that's fairly recent, but now they've really cracked the market here and they're doing well. You name it. I mean, I think the American owners love to go build in Italy sometimes. You know, it's, you know, having a trip to Tuscany to go pick up your boat is very, very special. And so, yeah, I mean, Italian brands do quite well here in the U.S. And they've been at it for many years. You know, as in Benetti and Ferretti have been working this market for a very, very long time, for example. And then, of course, on the other side of the world, you know, the Taiwanese builders have had a very long history here in the US, and so you have people like Ocean Alexander and Horizon doing quite well in the US. They get it. They've been with this market for a long time. So,
yeah, I know Ocean Alexander in particular are really trying to push the US market even harder at the moment. It's a real focus area for them, obviously.
Yeah, they get it. They get the market. You know, the request that their longtime designer now has been Evan Marshall, who lives in London but is American born, and he totally gets it. You know, the need for space, big plush furniture that's comfortable, you can easily go around, big open galleys for everybody to gather, you name it. And they're doing very nicely with their line now in the US.
And before we let you run off and go to Miami, because it's early morning with you,
I'm gonna be
you also are in charge of the big boat interview this week, which is with Joen Manku. What can you tell us about that? What did you guys chat about?
Oh, what did we not talk about? This is a fascinating design firm. I have to admit, I probably shouldn't put this in the public domain, but I had not heard of them before. And the reason they came onto my radar, so to speak, was because they are involved in their first interior yacht design with a beautiful, beautiful yacht shipping up at Admiral called Kensho. Fantastic looking boat, very different looking. And they're very interesting. They have a very diverse cultural background. One is French born and the other one is of Indian descent, but grew up in Canada. And they are architect and designers, very creative. They worked on projects like with the big brands, you know, Ducasse, and people design restaurants. They designed the gorgeous Air France lounge at Charles de Gaulle Airport. And very creative, very, they seem to think about things very differently. So we went all over those designs and how they got into the yachting space. And they've also designed trains. And one of them has an industrial designer background, so also works in that area. So yeah, very interesting, eye-opening interview. Nice.
Well, there we go. Well, so that will be released on Monday. So yeah, double Cecile this week.
Oh, cool.
I think that's everything we've got time for. Cecile will let you go and get a coffee and breakfast before you go to Miami. But
thank you very much. I can't wait to get in the car and sit in traffic.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you on Monday for the Big Boat interview.